This is the Business of Apps podcast, bringing you actionable insights from the leaders of the global app industry and the world's fastest growing apps. You can find more app news, data, and analysis over at businessofapps.com.
Welcome to the Business of Apps podcast. On this show, we invite app industry professionals to cover various topics, and we promise to do our best to keep it both insightful but brief. In this episode, we have Andy Carville, partner at Teacher. Andy, welcome to the Business of Apps podcast.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me on the show, Art.
Great. Thank you for coming. So, no matter what, if you're serious about building something, like building a house, car, spaceship, you name it, or your mobile app, you need a plan, or what we call an IT, a stack. I'm sure you see where I'm going with this. I have Andy Carville on the episode, and I've mentioned a stack, right? In this episode, we're going to be talking about mobile growth stack, the mobile growth stack, and to be precise, 2022 edition. So before doing that, let's talk about you, Andy, first. Tell us about yourself, your background.
Sure, it'd be a pleasure. My background is actually on the techie side of things. I was a developer before I kind of got into the world of marketing and growth. I was making software for many years. So my father actually taught me how to code, I think around the age of like 5 or 6, on early home computer systems in the UK. And all I wanted to do was make games. So it's interesting that you mentioned building spaceships. I'll get to that in a moment. But I was making games all through my childhood on home computer systems. And then I went to university, studied computer science, was applying for jobs in the games industry. After that, I built a PlayStation game for my final year project. I had built a Game Boy Advance game as a kind of a demo to try and get like interviews in the industry. And I just happened to land at Nokia, actually, who were hiring for game developers for their new R&D facility in the south of England. I'm from the UK. And so my first job out of university was to go and work for Nokia in research and development, developing games for their mobile phones. That was a super kind of interesting time. Like, mobile was just kind of taking off. This was back in 1999. It was like a really interesting challenge from a resource optimization point of view, trying to squeeze a decent game into 84 by 48 pixels on a monochrome display with limited RAM, limited ROM, had to basically fit like all of the code and data into 16 kilobytes. It was actually great fun. And I made a game there called Space Impact, which was a side-scrolling shoot 'em up game. One of the first, or definitely one of the first arcade games on a mobile phone. I spent a lot of time building spaceships there.
I see. Yeah. This is where the spaceships are coming in.
Exactly.
All right. I think it's one of the best ways to be introduced to something you're going to be devoting your life to from the very beginning, from your early age, when many things became to you, like when at the age when you can learn so many things easier than supposed to, you would try to start coding, when you're even teenager or later. So that's probably, that's in my estimate, that's the best way to get a professional later on for your life, starting very early. And building spaceships, even as a game, is a nice adventure. So it's not like precisely as just shooting them into space like in SpaceX, but I guess that's the next best thing, building a game about the spaceship. Okay. Let's move to the major topic on the table today, which is the mobile growth stack. So tell me about the concept. How'd you guys decided to do this thing? And to me, it looks like a map for app marketing team behind the app, what they should do overall. How do you see it? What was the genesis of this thing?
I'll come to the second point in a moment as to sort of what the purpose is, but so it's sort of the genesis of the mobile growth stack. So after many years making mobile games, I kind of took a bit of a detour, and I went to business school where I did a 12-year intensive MBA at Warwick in Warwick Business School in the UK. And kind of coming out of that, I ended up in Berlin to write my dissertation to sort of finish my course. I was working at a company called SponsorPay, they're now called Fiber, they're an ad network. I'm sure you're familiar with them. So I wrote my dissertation there and then ended up joining SoundCloud, who were already like a growing platform at that point. I think I joined 2011, that I was employee number 89, I think. And they brought me on, they were specifically looking for somebody with mobile experience. So I had like, I think at that point, around 10, 15 years of mobile experience. And they saw a big opportunity for mobile, but they weren't really sure how to capitalize on it. They saw like organically that they were getting more and more mobile traffic. They had a couple of mobile apps, Android and iOS, but they were, it was kind of the sideshow to the web product, which is where they were seeing, where they started basically. So they wanted to help to transition from being a mobile web first company to a mobile first company. And that's why they brought me on. And I hope that I was of some help there over the 4.5 years that I was there, and certainly was a fantastic opportunity to work in a high growth environment. Lots of data to work with, crazy cohorts of new users to play with and to run experiments with. Basically, to get back to your question, the mobile growth stack basically came about as me explaining my job and my approach to the leadership at SoundCloud, who didn't know much about mobile. And, so it's like kind of a real education step needed so that I could kind of make a case for, the strategy that I was building out there and to get the resources and the remit to do the work that I needed to do in order to grow the mobile app. So I basically put together this kind of what was originally just sort of a one page slide in a management presentation, explaining the growth strategy for mobile, and I kind of broke out some of the key levers for growth as I saw them for the SoundCloud app initially, this basically became and later the mobile growth stack. I presented this diagram at a course that I was teaching in Berlin at General Assembly. I was teaching like a mobile business course, and I noticed that people were very interested in this particular slide. It seemed like it was a kind of, I'd managed to kind of synthesize or condense quite a lot of information into a form which, had some organization around it and really helped people to kind of crystallize like, okay, this is what it, these are the kind of levers for growth for a mobile app. And so I kind of kept developing that to a point where I could publish that as a blog post. That went kind of viral and got kind of picked up all around the industry. I presented it at a conference. I think it was the App Promotion Summit back in 2014. And it really kind of seemed to land very well in the industry. A lot of folks, I think, found it very helpful. So back to the second point of your question, what exactly is it, right? So the mobile growth stack is essentially, I call it like a one-page cheat sheet for mobile marketers or mobile growth practitioners. It essentially breaks out and organizes in a kind of a structure the different levers for growth for a mobile app, the different kind of activities that you might want to consider employing in order to grow a mobile product, a mobile app. And it's organized by the kind of funnel stages: acquisition, engagement, retention, monetization. And over time, I've added additional kind of supporting layers to that. So analytics and insights, technology, and in the latest version, even some additional stuff around strategic management and things like that. So the idea is like it fits on one page and it provides an overview of the option space. Now, I will stop talking in a second because I'm sure you've got more questions, but just back to your, I think you mentioned that, this is something which can be like a list of the things that need to be done by a team in order to grow an app. I think that's one of the major misconceptions actually about the mobile growth stack. Right? There's lots of stuff in it. If you've seen it, and you can see it at mobilegrowthstack.com, it's quite a busy page. There's a lot of information on there. And I think one of the things which people often think is that they have to do all of these things in order to succeed.
Right.
And that's absolutely not the case. It's designed to be a tool for strategic planning. And strategy, I believe, is all about focus. So it's about making trade-offs, deciding what to focus on and what not to do. And so, you know, I'd say, you know, whilst a company might do more of the activities in the stack over time as they grow and they have more resources and they can build more competencies and bring in more technology, I've never seen a company that's doing everything in the stack, and neither would I recommend to do everything. You know, it's all about kind of using this to understand, like, what are your options? You can kind of, you know, use the stack to kind of make strategic decisions based on an understanding of, like, what are you choosing to do? And what are the things which you're deliberately choosing to leave off the table for now, at least?
So definitely not a to-do list, but kind of Correct. A overall landscape of what can be done, like the whole, and every member of a marketing team should see which part applicable, which part of this landscape can actually be applicable to a specific app, to a specific project they're working on. What would make sense in terms of, you know, better growth, more sustainable growth, what kind of a, like, how many people are in the team actually to pull off the whole thing, which is not possible, as you've said. But this is kind of a, instead of keeping the whole thing in your memory, you're putting on the paper, quote unquote, so we can see, like, what is the landscape of your opportunity to work on a project.
Exactly.
Let's walk through like the major chapters. To me, it a little bit looks like the table of elements, the chemical elements.
Yeah.
Like the second table I can remember in my memory which would pop up quickly, but would be that table. So let's start with acquisition. What are we putting into this basket?
I added a couple of new elements actually this year. I just put out like a major revamp of the stack for 2022. So I'm going to go through the latest one, which you can find at
growthstack.com.
Yeah. So so we added actually brand and content in the acquisition layer. I should point out, by the way, that some of these cells, as we call them, are like activities. Basically, every cell in the stack is an activity that you might do, except in the tech layer where it's actually describing bits of tech. So some of these cells actually cut through layers. So we've got brand and content there, cutting through acquisition, engagement and retention, and monetization, meaning that, like, if you get these things right, they can be a multiplier across all of those funnel stages. So, back to the acquisition layer. So we've got brand and content up at the top, and then organic acquisition with app store optimization, paid marketing, so performance marketing, influencer marketing, cross promotion, which we're seeing becoming increasingly important, actually. So things like web to app, or sometimes app to web, or app to set top box and things like that. We're seeing sort of, you know, these multi-device journeys becoming pretty important to measure and deploy effectively. Right, carrying on, we've got virality, content indexing, community. So community being could be both community support, providing like good support for your users, as well as community engagement, actually going out and building communities in places like, you know, Reddit or Twitter or wherever else users are gathering and talking about your product. So again, community is another one. All of these, the bottom, community, international, retargeting, and partnerships and integrations are again elements that cut right through the stack. So through acquisition, engagement and retention, and monetization, because we see if you do these things right, they can be like a catalyst.
So yeah, that's the acquisition, and yeah, that's one of the things that people should remember about this stack, is that, like you've said, even though we're going to be covering a specific parts, like the major parts of this stack, but components of these parts are applicable to several big parts, which is the point. You have to realize, like, on what stage a specific activity is applicable, and build your strategy based on this. Do not lose the focus on which activities are related to specific stage. Now, moving on to the engagement and retention, what is important here?
Yeah, this is a great one because, we put product right at the forefront of that. I think it's really important to bear in mind that, if you don't have an engaging product, then you can forget about doing things like activity notifications or some of the other stuff in this layer. You're not going to, sustainably move the needle in terms of engagement and retention if you don't have a great product, right? Or at least a product that some people find great.
Great. Mm-hmm.
So, product is definitely the most important lever in this section. We've included also brand and content. Again, these can be great multipliers for engagement. And then we've got onboarding and activation, typically a very key lever. Pretty much everybody is going to be working on that on an ongoing basis. Like onboarding and activation is rarely ever considered finished. And there's usually a lot of upside there. And then we've got things like activity notifications, applied behavioral science. This is a new addition in 22. So this is things like gamification, looking at cognitive biases and things like this, sort of basically applying a lot of the stuff that, for example, Near EL talks about and has, mm-hmm. has done some great work around, how to kind of apply behavioral science to drive engagement in apps and products. We've got lifecycle marketing. I've just made that a little bit distinct from activity notifications because it's a little bit broader. The distinction I make there is like lifecycle marketing is really about what stage of the lifecycle is the user in at that point. Maybe they're a new user, maybe they're a lapsed user, and you're basically addressing these segments differently with targeted messaging to try to kind of move them through the lifecycle in the most sort of optimal way. Versus activity notifications, which is really about letting the user know about something that's happening external to them. Like for example, at SoundCloud, we built an activity notification service that would let people know about new content hitting the platform and things like that. So that's a distinction there. And then again, we've got a bunch of stuff that cuts right through the stack: virality, content indexing, community, international retargeting, partnerships and integrations.
I should say that applied behavioral science is one of the welcomest addition to this stack, at least to me, because quite often we forget, we being focused on numbers only, forgetting that we're actually creating, developing a product for people who have certain habits. They have, each of those individuals have some specific behavior and the interaction between your product and that people. Well, essentially comes down to how well this product is delivering a value for that person. What is interaction and psychologically how that person is interact with your app. So factoring this thing into the overall stack is really important in my estimation. That is a great addition. Now, let's move to the bucket which dear to heart to every app developer, monetization. That's the ultimate reason why we're coming to creating your products. Very few of us are hobbyists. For the most part, we're coming into this thing to make money. That's a business. So what goes into the monetization basket?
Yeah, and I'm going to skip the ones which are like cutting through all of the layers because I already mentioned them twice. Yep. So the monetization stuff specifically. So what we're seeing is a big trend actually towards subscription becoming the dominant monetization model, as well as hybrid models, which maybe combine subscription with maybe advertising for folks who are not subscribers. Maybe you subscribe mm-hmm. to remove the ads and maybe paid things that you can top up a subscription with to buy specific functionality or premium content on top of a subscription. So just a bit of a precursor. And we added some stuff around subscription for this reason into the latest 22 stack because we see it being so important. The first element would be the revenue model. So that's basically, trying to decide how you're going to monetize your users. So exactly these kind of things that I just mentioned. Is it, is it a paid app? Is it, do you have in-app purchases? Is it a subscription recurring model, or is it ad funded, or is it some kind of hybrid of a mixed model? Then we have payment processing. So payment processing typically has been done, you know, more or less by the app stores. So the Apple App Store and Google Play Store over the last few years, but now they're really being forced to open up their payment flows and basically allow other forms of payment. So we see this payment processing mm-hmm. becoming even more relevant, as we go forward through 22. Then we have ad inventory management. This is a great example of something which is, you know, not something which every app should do, because it's only relevant if you've chosen an ad attention-based model where you're serving exactly. ads to users. But then if you do, it's really important to understand how to actually serve ads within your app and where you're going to do it and how you're going to bring that inventory in front of the user. Then we've got churn payer win back, which is, I guess, most important for churn subscribers, but could also be just, you know, folks who in the past have been purchasing a lot with in-app purchases and then have suddenly dropped off. How do you get those back? Also important for things like, e-commerce platforms, for example. You want to kind of bring back your high-value users. We have paywall optimization. Again, super important, particularly with subscription paywalls. We see the apps that are really succeeding there are putting a lot of work into personalizing and optimizing their paywalls. And finally, pricing. So that could be things like price testing, testing different bundles, maybe doing dynamic pricing, or it could be managing a virtual currency or virtual economy, particularly important for games, for example.
Right. I think to me, revenue models is the major component, in my estimation, in this stack, because the mixed model I believe is to be the best one, because it can basically meet many different groups, many cohorts of your users. For some people, it's easier to just pay a buck and open up some new feature going through the in-app purchase. For some people, they're completely okay with subscriptions. They don't mind to pay extra subscription on top of Netflix, Hulu, and whatever. Just go to that model. And some people really prefer to just pay once and do not pay on every month. So just pay it once and use the app. So, but it's really hard to pull, to include multiple models into your app technically and logistically. But if you can do that, if your app actually allowed to include multiple models, that is the best way to monetize your audience. You can meet different cohorts and their preferences. Moving on to the next part, which is tech. So what is involved here? And do you have any suggestions, by the way, for people to use kind of a single dashboard where every tool was included, or that's not possible to have one at this point?
I think it's one of these things that's like the holy grail that's never going to be found, right? One dashboard to rule them all, would make life very, very straightforward, I guess. But we haven't seen a commercial solution out there that can integrate all of the various data sources that you need into one dashboard. At Feature, we do build custom dashboards for various of our clients. They often want to, have dashboards looking at particular things in a lot of detail, like, for example, multi-market ASO dashboards and things like this. So we also build custom stuff, but I've never seen either in-house at a client or something that we've built or a commercial solution that covers everything that you might want to look at. That would be a huge dashboard. You'd get lost in it, I think. So no, unfortunately, I think it's always going to be the case that there's going to be different tech, you're also going to have different users logging into these different things, right? So, what might be super interesting to the DevOps team looking at low level, performance data and, crashes and stuff like that is not going to be so exciting or actionable for the marketing team or for the product team. So it's different folks looking at different stuff. We've got the tech layer, which I added basically to what I call a supporting layer. These are enabling capabilities, which you could either build in-house or license in. There's a lot of off-the-shelf products out there that can help mobile marketers with this stuff. So first up is behavioral analytics. I call it behavioral analytics, but it's like you could also call this product analytics. Talking about tools like Amplitude, Mixpanel, that you've built something similar yourself, but sometimes I also call this investigative analytics. It's basically the ability to look at your funnels, user flows. Firebase Analytics would be another example of something that gives you this kind of capability to track events and user behavior, which is why I call it behavioral analytics. Super important. And we'll maybe come back to why that is if we have time. Attribution and marketing analytics. So understanding how, where users are coming from, which is getting harder, of course, with the changes coming in with privacy, but still possible in a lot of scenarios to attribute users either precisely or increasingly less precisely, but to try to understand how your marketing campaigns are performing and how to allocate, how to make decisions around ad spend and budget allocation is always going to be critical. And we have kind of more nuts and bolts stuff like deep linking. It's not a super sexy topic, but it's really important to get it to work. You need to be able to drive users to all of the different places within your app, all of the different pieces of content within your app. There needs to be a way to link users there. A/B testing framework, so being able to actually set up and run experiments. Customer engagement platform. Often we see companies licensing a platform like Braze or Leanplum or CleverTap, for example, or Iterable to do these kind of like multi-channel marketing activities and build out sort of lifecycle marketing campaigns and flows. For things like push notifications, email, in-app messaging, things like that. Then ad monetization SDKs, again, only relevant if you're monetizing your app through ads, but then if so, then you probably need one or multiple monetization platforms integrated. Subscription SDKs, this is a new one in 22. We're seeing folks like Purchasly, RevenueCat, Conversion, various tools out there that are helping with various aspects of implementing subscriptions, as well as doing sort of subscription analytics or maybe also paywall optimization and things like that. Customer data platform, data warehouse, and data visualization as well. So sort of some folks will build a data viz layer on top of their data warehouse. And again, just like every other part of the stack, you don't need all of these things in order to succeed in your mobile app. Typically we see folks will buy in some of this stuff at early on, like maybe even pre-launch or build out some of this tech internally. And they'll slowly add more over time as their operation gets more complex and as they get more resources to do more. It kind of grows with your app.
Yeah, that's, like I said, that's the landscape, and your app occupies just a certain part of the landscape, bigger or smaller part, but not the entire landscape as a whole. Now, strategic management, this is one of the toughest buckets in my estimation, because strategy is not an easy thing. It's involved long-term thinking, trying to build the roadmap in advance for a longer period of time, not just for the next quarter. So what do we have in this strategic management bucket?
Yeah, so as I said earlier, Art, strategy is all about focus. And I added the strategic management layer because what I saw, from experience, basically from the last 5 years consulting with a lot of different apps. Some of them are public limited companies. Some of them are VC backed firms of various sizes. Some of them are sort of smaller operations. But like outside of just a very small startups, typically your kind of growth function is going to be just sort of one part of a bigger organization. And I think the bigger the organization and the more kind of stakeholders or more management layers, the more emphasis needs to be placed on not just the great growth work that's going on and an application of the mobile growth stack to grow the app, but also to think about how to communicate that stuff and coordinate with the other activities that are going on within the business. So that's kind of why I added this layer. So we've got things like growth team development, how to build out and integrate a growth team within the broader organization, set up reporting lines and stuff like that. the various ways you can structure that. KPI target setting and tracking. This is again helping to make sort of trade-off decisions and focus areas in the context, in the broader context of the business. Scenario planning, which is kind of like a kind of a classic strategic thinking approach, which you know it needs to be kind of empowered with data. So in order to do proper scenario planning, of course, you need all the right insights and input, and essentially have like a growth model, which you can then use to work with the management team within the company to look at different scenarios of like, you know, what and make sort of strategic bets. Like, you know, should we increase acquisition by 10% or should we increase retention, try to increase retention by 1%? You know, most companies can't answer those kind of questions, and scenario planning sort of supported by a growth model, like, you know, allows you to kind of, you know, pick which scenario is going to be better for you. Company reporting, yeah, again, not a super sexy topic, but you know, these are the kind of activities which are become pretty essential, like, you know, that are like when you're doing more than just a sort of a small growth team in a startup, you need to think about how to actually report on these initiatives, you know, within the broader context of the company. And then aligning roadmaps across product, tech and engineering, marketing and content, and trying to bring all those things together, you know, for maximum growth impact.
All right, now we have analytics and insights. That's the biggest chunk of the this landscape of the stack. So what would be like the major part of that part? What should, like, again, like we said, we're not focusing on some specific thing. All landscape is more or less equally important, depending like which part is applicable to your app. But if you can pick up from analytics and insights, what would be like the essential part?
A couple of essential parts, yeah, because it is a big layer. Let's not go through all of the elements of it, but yeah, I mean, I do really believe that, you know, analytics and insights should be the foundation of which you're building your whole kind of growth efforts on. So if you're going to pick a couple, like, you know, particularly sort of maybe if you're sort of starting out, the things which are most essential, I would say it's getting the data taxonomy and event tracking set up correctly and ideally documented well. You know, we don't see always event taxonomy documented very well within organizations. Often it's done by somebody who then has left and then it's been added to over time and it gets a bit out of sync between Android and iOS. Again, not a sexy topic, but really important to have your fundamental tracking set up properly, because that's the cornerstone of all of your analytics work. So I'd say if you do one thing right, it's like actually get your tracking set up. And that includes things like attribution as well. And then in terms of like activities which will really help with analytics, I'd say some of the basics would be cohort analysis. That's kind of a classic. You want to be able to look at your data in a cohorted way, see how those cohorts are developing over time. So, you know, people who joined this month, how are they behaving? How are they behaving compared to the folks who joined a month ago or 2 months ago? Being able to look at stuff in a cohorted way really kind of opens up a whole new layer of insights. And then funnel analysis, you know, funnels, you know, just kind of like the classic way of like understanding how many people are getting through certain flows, where are they dropping off, really key to doing growth optimization. So that would be the ones I pick out. Oh, and one more, segmentation. It's kind of essential at some point that you start to segment users and address them differently, both from just the analytics point of view, looking at how different segments are behaving, just like you might look at cohorts, like cohorts, just a form of segmentation actually. But then also how you're actually interacting with those users as well. So ability to segment users, to create funnels, and to cohort would be the basics. Yeah.
Right, absolutely. Segmentation is really essential. You're beginning your project, your app project with an assumption that you have a profile of your user, people you're trying to reach out with your product. But then as time goes on, you realize that people are using your app differently and you have to approach them differently, different messaging, different models to monetize your app with these people. But you have to take into account that having hundreds, thousands, sometimes millions of users, it's just unavoidable that all these people may interact with your app differently, and you have to just factor in these differences. final bucket will be management insights. What do we have here?
Yeah, thankfully this is a short one that won't take long. So management insights, again, I kind of added this in the 22 stack to support the strategic management layer above it. So here we have growth accounting, being able to look at like not just like how your monthly active users are developing, but also like on a month by month basis, how many new users, returning users, churned users, and get that accounting view. Growth modeling, which I think I already mentioned, you know, the ability to actually properly understand how and project into the future how your numbers are going to grow. KPI dashboards. So you mentioned dashboards earlier. So it's like I think a pretty classic one for management is just sort of like, you know, what are your KPIs? What's your North Star metric? If you're subscribing to the North Star kind of paradigm, but in any case, like what are the couple of key metrics that you're trying to optimize towards, and can you get like a daily or maybe even like hourly snapshot of how they're developing? Automated reporting, you know, so there might be stuff that you want to look at on a dashboard, but there's also stuff you might want in your inbox as a report or to be able to generate on demand. And competitor tracking. So I think this is something where, you know, particularly at a management level, like you want to be kind of aware of how the market's evolving, because product market fit is not just a function of your product. It's also a function of the market. And the market can change pretty rapidly around you. And suddenly you don't have product market fit anymore if you've got a competitor out there that's suddenly eating your lunch. So I think it's important to have competitor tracking in there as well.
Yeah, eating your lunch would be a disaster, let alone to stealing your audience for your product. So definitely, absolutely. Keeping your eye on your competitors is always important. These people are not sitting, you know, and not doing anything with their product. They're keeping their eyes on you, and you have to do the same thing for them to be ahead, to have a leg up on their features of their product. So that's kind of it for the overall kind of a bird view for the whole stack. If you're looking for something like this, what is the ultimate map of activities that can or should be done for an app, a project? This is it. So we're going to be putting the link to this stack into this episode description. So after listening to our conversation, you'll be able to dig into, you know, specifics and have this thing in front of you for your own app project. And again, this is not the to-do list. We're not forcing you to go through every single step. This is the landscape, the spectrum of things that can be done.
The app industry is vast. To navigate this space, you need a directory to look up suppliers and partners, and you need to know who are the best. Visit our marketplace directory at businessofapps.com/marketplace/podcast. And now, back to the show.
All right, that was the major topic on the table, and we have just a very small segment with a few questions that I'm asking every guest on the show, because I do want to let people who are listening to me know every guest on this show a little bit better. So quick, rapid-fire questions, and question number one, what smartphone do you have? Have you been switching between Android or iOS, or staying one side all the time?
So right now, my primary SIM is in an iPhone 12. I've been using this one for a while. I do try to switch between them pretty often. So I have also a Google Pixel here on my desk. It's got a secondary SIM in it. I think it's really important to stay abreast of, you know, the developments on both of the major OSs. It's a bit rarer that I would venture beyond Android and iOS. But it used to be that I would play around with some slightly more exotic devices. But these days it's usually iPhone or I typically, if I'm going Android, I would go with the Google Pixel as like the kind of reference device.
Right. So that's a smart thing to do, to be on both platforms professionally, to see what's going on with the latest and greatest. What was your first mobile phone before smartphone era and that time? Nokia?
As I mentioned, I joined Nokia right out of university. So I was 24 years old, something like that. I didn't own a mobile phone when I joined. So on my like first week in the office, I was, you know, getting to play with these devices, some of which weren't going to hit the streets for another year or so. But I was allowed to take home not the the super advanced prototypes, but I was able to, you know, I had access to pretty much every Nokia device. So my first phone was the Matrix phone, the 7110, which had like the sliding, you could click it and it, you know, kind of like slides open the keyboard cover, slides down. It's a super, super sexy phone. I think still a classic. And yeah, I was able to, yeah, of course, also flash that with a custom ROM. So it always had like the sort of in progress versions of the games that I was developing. I think I put like a custom version of Pac-Man, which never actually got released, but I had it on my 7110. It's just something that I just coded just to get to know the operating and development environment.
Yeah, that's awesome memory to have from those days. Now, back to present. Imagine you've left your smartphone at home for whatever reason. What would be the most missing feature for you when you're out?
GPS, without a doubt. My sense of direction is appalling. I have been known to get lost in small buildings. And, you know, if I was to be outside for any length of time, without my smartphone, there's a good chance that I would end up dying of exposure or dehydration, possibly within a few hundred meters of my home.
Got you. Now, are there any features on your iPhone 12 right now that are actually missing? Could be hardware, software, something that you're kind of thinking, wouldn't be great if that thing can do this or that. It's not necessarily something that is trendy, something that will be particularly useful for you.
Missing features. Yeah, I don't know, like the, you know, I'm pretty happy with the iPhone 12 in terms of like, I remember that the first time that I saw the night camera mode on it, I just like took it out at night and saw the crazy night camera stuff. It's like, it's really like something out of a science fiction movie.
Sci-fi, right.
Yeah. And so I guess, you know, like since a lot of development's going on in the sort of the camera direction, it seems to be where most of the innovation is happening right now. I guess, you know, something that I would like to see just from a fun perspective would be like full on night vision. So it's like it's already got pretty good sort of semi night vision, but sort of like something like proper full on infrared cam or something like that would be fun. And then I think like, you know, anything that can help with like 3D scanning. I downloaded an app recently called Realize. I met some folks at a conference the other week from Realize. It's like a interior design app. Now I'm not much into interior design, but this app is really cool. Like you can literally scan your room, you know, with standard smartphone tech as it exists today. Basically it creates a 3D scan of your room and then you can start placing furniture and moving stuff around within the room. So it's like augmented reality. And I could see that, you know, with some extra hardware and or software features to support augmented reality like that, stuff that would like do like laser scanning of a room super fast or something like that, you could create some like really interesting experiences.
Yeah, I'm totally with you. I remember checking IKEA catalog, which was using that feature even before Apple introduced API for everybody to use that feature. And even back then, it was pretty impressive what IKEA was able to pull off. Now, when you have the latest model or iPhone 13 or you know your iPad Pro, that's just amazing to see that the objects you're putting on in your room actually have everything right. The lighting, the shadows, the dimensions, you even looks like you're trying to touch that thing that is not existing. It's only in your camera battery.
Yeah, it's pretty insane.
Yeah, that's insane for sure. All right. Very final question before I let you go. How can people get in touch with you and get more information about what you do, Andy?
Yeah, so you can follow me on Twitter, Andy_Carvell, Carvell. You can always check out what Feature is up to. We have a couple of different blogs on www.feature.com, P-H-I-T-U-R-E.com. You can also get in touch with me via the website there. We have a contact form, but probably easiest to reach out to me on Twitter. Or you can hit me up on email. It's andy@feature.com.
Terrific. Thank you for coming on the show, Andy. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Art. Thanks for having me. It's been a pleasure.
And that was Andy Carville, partner at Feature. To listen to more episodes, subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Podcasts. Just search for Business of Apps and you will find us easily. We release episodes on Mondays, so subscribe and you'll be able to get new episodes on your smartphone, tablet, or computer, if you're still listening to podcasts on the computer, as soon as we release them. And please don't forget to leave us a review and comment on iTunes. It is highly appreciated. And all episodes will also be available on businessofapps.com. Thank you for listening. See you next week.
Thank you for listening to the Business of Apps podcast. For more, head on over to businessofapps.com.